Welcome to the debate. You know, imagine treating a fish for like a chronic respiratory disease. You carefully pull it out of the tank, you administer this highly targeted evidence-based medication to improve its gill function, and then you drop it right back into water that is completely saturated with toxic chemicals.
Right.
I mean, in modern human medicine, we do a version of this every single day. We call it chronic disease management.
Yeah, it's a profound dilemma. You can't just medicate the gills and ignore the poison in the water. But you know, at the same time, if that fish is actively dying of gill failure, analyzing the water chemistry won't save its life in that exact moment. I mean, you still need the medicine.
Oh, absolutely. The immediate intervention is critical. But when you step back and look at the global crisis of non-communicable diseases, conditions like type 2 diabetes, essential hypertension, cardiovascular disease, the purely mechanical fix-the-part approach really begins to fail us.
Well, that's what we're digging in today.
Exactly. Today, our focus is Dr. Bishara Saheli's academic white paper, Non-Communicable Disease and the Worlds We Conserve. And the central question we are grappling with is this: should non-communicable diseases, or NCDs, continue to be addressed primarily through the established biomedical risk factor model, or, you know, must we fundamentally reframe them as organism niche miscouplings using Humberto Maturana's biology of living?
Right.
I argue that NCDs are deeply conserved relational adaptations to pathogenic environments, and treating them requires us to actively reopen domains of action rather than just prescribing pills.
And I argue that while the surrounding environment undeniably matters, I mean, of course it does, displacing the proven biomedical risk factor model with abstract autopoetic theory risks overcomplicating actionable care. And worse, it risks romanticizing biological deterioration.
Look, let me lay out why this reframing is so urgent. The standard risk factor model, where a doctor measures your blood pressure, your fasting glucose, your BMI, and targets those specific numbers, it's fundamentally incomplete.
Incomplete how?
What treats the human body as a closed loop, right? Like it's the primary site of the disease, while entirely ignoring the world that shapes and sustains that body. The core thesis from Dr. Saheli's material is that NCDs are not simply isolated biological failures. They are stabilized disturbances of organism niche coherence.
And to jump in briefly here, when you say organism niche coherence, you're basically talking about the fit between a human being and their specific environment, right?
Exactly, yeah. It means that treating a patient for an unhealthy diet or labeling them with medication noncompliance without addressing the ultra-processed food environment they live in or their extreme time scarcity is intellectually hollow.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I will absolutely acknowledge that emergency biomedical care is necessary. I mean, if someone is in diabetic ketoacidosis, they need insulin. But true sustained healing requires transforming the relational conditions that make healthier patterns of living actually possible to conserve.
Right. Well, I defend the indispensability and the absolute primacy of the biomedical risk factor framework. Let's be really clear about what we're critiquing here. This model is the bedrock of modern public health.
Sure.
It identifies measurable, actionable biological states that allow physicians to intervene before a stroke or a heart attack actually happens. Now, the paper's focus on the social and commercial determinants of health is completely valid. Nobody is arguing that food deserts don't exist or that stress doesn't impact health.
Right, but...
But utilizing Humberto Maturana's complex systems biology is where we really part ways. For listeners who might not be steeped in, you know, 1970s cybernetics and Chelan biology, the text uses terms like autopoiesis, languaging, and the biology of love.
Yes, it does.
These are incredibly dense philosophical abstractions. They threaten to dilute clinical focus. Even the text itself provides a clear safeguard, warning against romanticizing adaptation. Because if we start reframing deadly progressive conditions like chronic kidney disease as adaptations or survival mechanisms, we risk delaying time-sensitive, evidence-based treatments that we know save lives. And we do that in favor of analyzing a patient's so-called structural coupling with their environment.
Okay, I think the clearest way to see why this framework isn't just philosophical baggage is to look right at the center of the clinical encounter. Specifically, let's look at the concept of noncompliance.
Okay.
Traditional medicine looks at a patient whose numbers are out of range and asks, why is this patient noncompliant? Why aren't they taking the statin? Why aren't they losing the weight? It is a deficit model that inherently blames the patient.
Well, not always intentionally, but yes.
Right. But the Maturana-informed view fundamentally shifts that inquiry. Instead of asking what is broken, it asks, what pattern of living is being conserved here?
What do you mean by conserved?
Well, this is where that term autopoiesis comes in. Simply put, autopoiesis means self-creation. It's the idea that a living organism isn't just a machine reacting to inputs. It is a system constantly rebuilding itself to survive its specific environment.
Okay.
So let's look at the text analysis of hypertension. In the standard model, high blood pressure is an issue of vascular tone, maybe renal sodium handling, and you just fix it with a diuretic or a beta blocker. But through the lens of organism-niche miscoupling, hypertension is often a body's physiological adaptation to a life of perpetual vigilance.
Perpetual vigilance?
Yeah, it is a biological reflection of financial panic. It is a heavy caregiving burden. It's chronically poor sleep. Treating that kind of hypertension purely with medication while leaving a patient in a state of chronic financial panic is like turning down the volume on a fire alarm while the house is still burning. You're masking the symptom of the blaze, but you're ignoring the flames.
Look, I'm sorry, but I just don't buy that. Let me tell you why. That analogy implies traditional medicine doesn't smell the smoke, which just isn't true.
I think it often ignores the smoke.
No, what you are describing is already handled perfectly well by the existing biopsychosocial model and the field of behavioral medicine. We do not need to redefine a patient as an autopoietic unity to understand that stress spikes cortisol, which raises blood pressure. Any good physician knows that a patient facing severe financial distress is going to struggle with health outcomes.
But knowing it and having a framework to treat it are two different things.
Sure. But furthermore, my deep concern with shifting the terminology from compliance to what the paper calls co-creation is that it might unintentionally remove individual agency.
How so?
When we say that a behavior like smoking or eating fast food is simply an emergent property of structural coupling with a pathogenic environment, we dilute the patient's responsibility to manage their health. Compliance is a clear, measurable metric. Did you take the medication that will prevent a stroke, or did you not? When we replace that with assessing whether their environment allows for healthier action, we paralyze the clinical process.
I see why you think that, but let me give you a different perspective on how agency actually functions in the real world.
Please do.
Telling an exhausted, financially strained person to exercise more and eat organic does not grant them agency. It generates shame when they inevitably fail to meet an impossible standard within their current constraints.
Well,
this brings us to the CARE method outlined in the paper, which stands for contextualize, assess, reopen, and embed. This method actually restores agency. And let me explain how. Imagine a standard 12-minute primary care consult.
Which is incredibly brief.
Exactly. Under the standard model, the doctor sees a high BMI and says, you need to join a gym and change your diet. Under the CARE model, the doctor contextualizes first. They ask about the patient's routine and discover they work two jobs and live in a neighborhood with literally no safe sidewalks.
Okay, that's valid.
Then comes the crucial step, reopen. Instead of demanding a massive, sweeping lifestyle change, the clinician works with the patient to reopen a feasible domain of action. They look for one small, non-forcing change. Maybe it's, 5 minutes of stretching before bed to downregulate the nervous system. That is not removing agency. It is identifying where agency can actually be exercised.
Yeah, you mentioned reopening a domain of action, but a domain of action doesn't unclog an artery.
No, it doesn't.
Right. We cannot lose sight of the biological reality of the diseases themselves. Let's shift to what is physically happening inside the body. I want to point directly to the specific safeguard mentioned in Dr. Saley's text, which states, do not romanticize adaptation. Some disease processes are destructive regardless of their adaptive history.
Yes, I agree completely with that.
But if we lean too heavily into viewing obesity simply as a metabolic adaptation to trauma or food pricing, we are treading on very dangerous ground. Or take chronic inflammation.
Sure.
If you view chronic inflammation as just an adaptive response to social adversity, you ignore the reality that it aggressively drives atherosclerosis, insulin resistance, and neuroendocrine damage. Plaque building up in the coronary arteries does not care about the patient's structural coupling. It causes a myocardial infarction all the same. If the clinical focus drifts toward understanding the emotioning and the languaging that led to the inflammation, we risk losing the clinical urgency required to stop the physical damage.
See, that's an interesting point, though I would frame it differently, because we are actually in agreement about the danger of ignoring the physical pathology.
Good.
Yeah, the text is incredibly explicit on this. The Maturana framework does not replace causal pathophysiology. It does not replace pharmacotherapy, oncology, or emergency care. If a patient's blood pressure is 180 over 110, lowering that pressure is paramount.
Absolutely.
But what the biology of living provides is the explanation of how that structural coupling becomes biology in the first place. It explains the embodiment of the environment. Take the vascular system. Under this framework, the vascular system is not just a collection of mechanical pipes. It becomes a recorder of lived exposure.
A recorder?
Yes. Every moment of chronic stress, every inhalation of polluted air, every ultra-processed meal, every disrupted sleep cycle, it is all physically recorded in the endothelial function, the inner lining of the blood vessels. Acknowledging that the body is a recorder doesn't mean we don't treat the atherosclerosis. It means we stop pretending that prescribing a statin is a cure when we are sending the patient right back into the exact same pathogenic environment.
I come at it from a different way. If the vascular system is a recorder of lived exposure, the physician's primary absolute job is still to stop the recording from destroying the machine.
But how do you stop it long term?
Let's look at the World Health Organization's best buys for NCDs, which are actually highlighted in the material. These are highly pragmatic, empirically proven interventions. We are talking about regulatory frameworks, fiscal policies like taxing sugar-sweetened beverages, clinical protocols, and strict pharmacological management.
Right.
These remain the most reliable tools we possess, regardless of the philosophical framing. The WHO best buys don't require us to parse whether a patient is a self-producing unity. They simply recognize the mechanics of populations. If you reduce sodium in the food supply, blood pressure drops. If you increase tobacco taxes, lung cancer rates fall. These are structural, environment-altering interventions that operate perfectly well without the heavy, esoteric baggage of autocoetic theory.
But why do those WHO best buys work? They work precisely because they altered the structural coupling between the organism and the niche.
Well,
the philosophical framing matters because it changes how we measure success and failure, which dictates where we direct our resources. And this leads directly to the concept of the Life Coherent NCD dashboard introduced in the text.
Ah, the dashboard.
Yes. Currently, we measure clinical success almost exclusively through biomedical indicators. You know, HbA1c to measure average blood sugar, lipids for cholesterol, EGFR to check kidney function.
Which are standard vital metrics.
They are necessary, but they are vastly insufficient on their own. The dashboard argues that we must also measure lived coherence. Alongside the blood work, are we tracking community food access? Are we tracking movement safety, stress load, and trust in the care system? Let me ground this in a very specific, stark example provided in the material regarding small island developing states, or SIDS, like St. Kitts and Nevis.
Right, the Caribbean context.
Exactly. How can we possibly expect to treat NCDs effectively in that context without deeply assessing the niche? These islands have a massive dependence on imported ultra-processed foods because local agriculture often struggles against economies of scale.
True.
They face intense commercial pressures. And crucially, they are profoundly vulnerable to climate stress, extreme heat, water scarcity, and devastating hurricanes that regularly disrupt health infrastructure and medication supply chains. If a clinic in St. Kitts only looks at a diabetic patient's HbA1c and ignores the fact that a hurricane just wiped out local agriculture a month prior, flooding the market with cheap, highly processed emergency calories, that clinic is missing the actual mechanism driving the disease.
Okay, but
They're trying to fix a biological metric without realizing the entire biological context has shifted.
That's a compelling argument. But have you considered the sheer, overwhelming practicality of implementing this dashboard for a primary care clinician?
I don't think it's overwhelming.
Oh, I do. You know, if you're a primary care doctor listening to this right now, you're probably rolling your eyes. Think about your daily reality. You have maybe 10 to 15 minutes per patient. If a dashboard requires a doctor to continuously monitor a patient's kidney function alongside their climate resilience, their food access, and the macroeconomic trade policies of their community, it radically burdens an already strained health system with planetary-level problems.
That's not what the dashboard...
Primary care cannot become the clearinghouse for solving global supply chain economics and climate change. It is simply unworkable. We need physicians to focus on medical diagnoses and treatments, not on assessing whether the trade policies of a small island state are conducive to viable living. By expanding the scope of medical data to include everything from community walkability to global climate stress, you paralyze the clinician with variables they have absolutely no power to control.
I'm not convinced by that line of reasoning because it misinterprets how the dashboard is actually meant to be utilized in practice.
How so?
The dashboard explicitly differentiates between clinical domains, lived coherence domains, and system or policy domains. It absolutely does not ask the primary care doctor to fix the climate or single-handedly rewrite international trade policies during a 15-minute consult.
But it asks them to monitor it.
What it does is ask the system to recognize reality. It asks the health ministry, the hospital administrators, and the policymakers to realize that prescribing an expensive, fresh produce diet to a patient trapped in a climate-stressed food desert is biologically and practically incoherent.
Well, sure, from a policy level.
And for the clinician sitting in the room with the patient, this framework doesn't add a burden, it relieves one. Through the CARE method, it distills all that complexity down to one simple, practical action: finding the non-forcing change. It means the doctor stops berating the patient for eating the imported ultra-processed food when that is objectively all they can afford.
Right.
Instead, it shifts the encounter from blame to understanding. On a macro level, the dashboard is a tool of visibility. If we only measure the blood pressure, we only see the biological failure. If we measure the niche, society is forced to see that high NCD rates are not a collection of individual moral failures, but a glaring signal that the society's way of living is generating disease.
Look, I understand the desire for that visibility. I really do. And I agree we shouldn't blame patients for systemic failures. But we must be incredibly cautious not to dilute the proven, actionable power of the biomedical risk factor model. The history of medicine shows us over and over that sharp, narrow focus yields results.
Sometimes, yes.
When we discovered that the HIV virus caused AIDS, we didn't solve the immediate mortality crisis by mapping the entire socioeconomic niche of the patients, though they were, of course, highly marginalized. We solved the mortality crisis by developing antiretroviral therapy.
But NCDs are different than an infectious virus.
I maintain that while recognizing the social and commercial determinants of health is vital, and again, the field of public health already does this, layering on complex autopoietic theories risks expanding the scope of clinical care so broadly that it becomes paralyzed. We must protect the targeted efficiency of biomedical care. If the focus drifts too far into the abstract realms of emotioning and relational domains, we will fail the patients sitting in front of us who need immediate, targeted physiological interventions to prevent organ failure today.
And I would summarize my position by saying that the Maturana-informed framework does not abandon biomedical science in the slightest. It deepens it. By recognizing NCDs as conserved miscouplings between a living organism and a pathogenic world, we can actually transform primary care. We turn it from a mere prescription dispensing mechanism into true relational infrastructure. We turn public health into the redesign of our niche. It allows us to step back and ask what kind of world we are building and whether that world makes healthier ways of living actually possible to conserve. It brings humanity, dignity, and biological reality together in a way that the purely mechanical, isolated model simply cannot achieve.
Well, it is clear we both agree that a patient's context deeply, profoundly influences their health outcomes. The vulnerabilities seen in the Caribbean context, you know, the reliance on imported foods, the climate stressors, the fragility of health systems during extreme weather, these are undeniable realities that shape disease trajectories.
Absolutely.
Where we remain in firm disagreement is whether redefining NCDs entirely through the lens of Humberto Maturana's biology of living is a necessary paradigm shift or an overly abstract complication of urgent medical care. I believe we can address those structural vulnerabilities using our current epidemiology and public health frameworks without requiring physicians to become philosophers of autopoiesis.
Grappling with both the immediate, pressing biological reality of the body and the complex, overlapping environments that shape it is absolutely essential for truly understanding chronic disease. We have to look at the toxicity of the water, not just the gills of the fish. We encourage everyone listening to explore the care method and the Life Coherent Dashboard in Dr. Sali's source material to decide for themselves where the boundaries of clinical responsibility should lie. Because, you know, until we figure out how to clean the tank, we're going to be treating the symptoms for a very long time.